Rules for President Biden's new COVID-19 vaccine mandate are out, and they've already been put on hold. Under the requirements, companies with at least 100 employees would have to make sure those workers are either vaccinated or undergo weekly testing. Those who are unvaccinated would also have to wear a mask at work. That move would apply to about 84 million people. Workers will be allowed to seek medical and religious exemptions. The changes are set to take effect on January 4th. In a statement on Thursday, President Biden said, quote, "While I would have much preferred that requirements not become necessary, too many people remain unvaccinated for us to get out of this pandemic for good." But on Saturday, a federal appeals panel temporarily blocked that measure, saying, quote, "The petitions give cause to believe there are grave statutory and constitutional issues with the mandate. The injunction has no immediate effect." You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these new requirements? If you're vaccinated, would they make you feel safer around the office? If you're unvaccinated, would this give you motivation to get the shot? Would you consider leaving your job over that mandate? If you're an employer, what are you wondering about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Brian Dean Abramson is an adjunct professor of vaccine law at the Florida International University College of Law. He's the author of Vaccine, Vaccination, and Immunization Law. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we step into the federal mandate, I wanted to ask you about a big story here in Wisconsin. Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay quarterback, out with COVID, didn't play yesterday in the Packers' loss. He said in an interview Friday he didn't get vaccinated, said he was allergic to something in two of the shots, worried about side effects of another, got an alternative treatment. The NFL considers him unvaccinated. Here's what Rodgers had to say about whether he had lied about his vaccination status.
The organization knew exactly what my status was. My teammates knew exactly what my status was. There was nothing that was hidden.
As someone who studies vaccine law and policy, what are your thoughts on this big sports story here in the state?
Well, it's fascinating. You know, we don't really know what the interchange between Rodgers and the team was, the team management was, with regard to his vaccination status. So taking him at his word, that would mean that the organization allowed him to carry on as if he were vaccinated, even though he didn't receive a vaccine that is approved by the FDA or the CDC. It doesn't meet those standards. There are a lot of kind of treatments out there that are being pushed by charlatans that say that, you know, this will provide you with immunity that don't do that. So, you know, really the team dropped the ball if that is the exchange that happened, and then they allowed him to carry on as if he was vaccinated. And, you know, if it turns out that his representation of the team was different from what he's saying now, that is in employment law, of course, a basis for terminating employees if they misrepresent their vaccination status. But really, I think, you know, people who have an objection to vaccination should just come out and say, well, I have this objection to vaccination, and not engage in sort of machinations where they say that, well, I have some other protection, or where they misrepresent or obfuscate what their actual vaccination status is.
So most of us don't work for the NFL, but a lot of us work with organizations that these new guidelines would apply to under the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. What stands out most to you about how this vaccination mandate would go into effect on January 4th? What struck you about the rules?
The most remarkable thing about it is how aggressive it is in pressing vaccination as a means to get out of the pandemic. You know, I had thought that there was a chance that OSHA might frame this as a testing requirement, say everyone has to be tested for COVID with vaccination as a way to get out of the testing requirement. And they did not. They went the opposite direction. They said, we want everyone to be vaccinated. This is a vaccination requirement. Companies have to carry out vaccination of their employees. And as a secondary and kind of less preferred alternative, you can have a testing requirement for employees. At the same time, there were some concerns that I had about constitutionality of the regulation, the way that it was initially framed. They did in their final rule exempt people who work entirely from home and also exempt people who work entirely outdoors. And that alleviates a lot of concerns that I would have had about, you know, how can the government require people who are entirely teleworking require those people to be vaccinated or require companies to have those employees vaccinated. So in some ways, it is more stringent than I had expected. And in some ways, it is somewhat lenient. And I did expect that there would be more leniency than what the Biden administration had initially announced.
One of the arguments I've seen against it, as people are companies and conservative legal groups are filing lawsuits against it, the idea that this is OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, not a public health organization. The argument is they don't have the power to fight a pandemic. The Biden administration saying, well, it's a workplace safety issue. So, yeah, they do. How do you judge between those two arguments?
Well, there are a couple of things that stick out to me. First of all, that the actual statute that was enacted in 1970 or the early 1970s that creates OSHA specifically says that it is in place to help prevent workplace injuries or illness. So from the very beginning, it has had this remit to combat illness and disease that is spread in the workplace. It's just that the primary activity that OSHA has engaged in over the years is things like making sure people are wearing safety helmets and that people working in high places have harnesses and railings and electrical wires are grounded and things that are much more injury directed. However, in 1991, OSHA did institute a bloodborne pathogen standard, which is directly aimed at preventing the spread of HIV and hepatitis B, and has as a component of that a requirement that employers make the hepatitis B vaccine available to employees, and at least encourages employees to receive that vaccine and requires them to acknowledge, if they don't, that they're at risk of the disease and at risk of spreading the disease and that they have the right to receive it. So it's something that has been in OSHA's remit for the entirety of its existence. It's just not an area that OSHA has directed its resources and attentions to a great deal as compared to, you know, workplace injuries that are caused by slips and falls or burns or chemical explosions or things like that.
We're talking about the federal vaccine mandate scheduled to go into effect January 4th. A lot of court challenges between now and then. Brian Dean Abramson is with us from the Florida International University College of Law, author of Vaccine, Vaccination, and Immunization Law. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. John starts us off in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, thanks. I got two questions actually now. One quick one is, are vaccines and their boosters supposed to be free for the foreseeable future to the user? I feel like that's important if they're required. But my more important question is, what would constitute a religious exemption? I know that there are some more wild political movements out there that are starting to sound more like a religion rather than a political movement. And I'm wondering if, like, QAnon would count as a religion.
John, thanks for the call. So to John's first point, is it important that these vaccines are free to allow this this mandate to go forward?
Yes, the vaccines are free. They're expected to remain free for the foreseeable future. That is covered in federal legislation that was passed at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, before the vaccines were developed. And they should remain so. And even if that ceases, if that resides in terms of the vaccines being free, employers would be required to cover the cost of employees receiving the vaccines, as they are for the hepatitis B vaccine for employees in the medical field. But generally speaking, vaccines are a fairly low-cost product per dose. And that goes for, you know, the childhood vaccines. It goes for the flu shot when you go to Walmart or CVS or what have you, and they give you the shot for free and even in some places give you a coupon for going there to get the shot because they're getting paid by Medicare for it. So, you know, someone pays for the cost of it, but so far it's been the United States government that has paid for a tremendous number of doses that should be enough to last years and years. So it'll be a long time before we worry about the cost.
And John asked about what constitutes a religious exemption. What does it take for someone to claim that to avoid the vaccine mandate?
Well, that is a very interesting question because it is somewhat amorphous. The OSHA standard says to look at what the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has said about religious exemptions. And the EEOC has said to be fairly open-minded towards employers in accepting claims of need for a religious exemption from an employee. The real question that an employer has to assess is this a sincerely held religious belief? And is the belief that is being expressed really religious as opposed to kind of a philosophical or something that's outside the scope of religion? There is historically case law, for example, where someone said that an angel had appeared to them and told them that they shouldn't be vaccinated. And that was ultimately litigated. And the court said, well, you know, they sincerely believe this, so you have to treat it as a sincerely held belief. On the other side, there's an old Delaware case where a woman said that she had pagan beliefs and was against vaccination. But when she was questioned about that, she basically said, I think vaccines are harmful and so forth. And the court said, well, we don't believe that you're sincerely expressing your religious belief. And then this woman said, well, then I'm going to convert and become a Jehovah's Witness, because Jehovah's Witnesses have a longstanding objection to vaccination or belief against vaccination. And the court found that to be insincere, that she wasn't really sincerely becoming a member of that religion. We have seen in recent months, in particular, as vaccine mandates have ramped up, the expansion on the internet of these sort of fly-by-night online ministries that pop up and say, well, for a fee, we will write out a form that says that vaccination is against your religion, and you can provide that to your employer. And I really think that that's unfortunate. I think that it harms the status of religion in our society as a force that has been part of the fabric of this country since its founding. You know, we don't want religion to come to be seen as just this means to an end through which someone can avoid getting out of something they don't want to do.
We're talking about the Biden administration's new COVID-19 vaccination mandate set to take effect early next year. Brian Dean Abramson is with us, adjunct professor of vaccine law at the Florida International University College of Law. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, hear from more of you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about the Biden administration's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Rules just came out, scheduled to go into effect on January 4th, affecting workplaces with at least 100 employees. Lots of court action expected between now and then. Brian Dean Abramson stays with us from the Florida International University College of Law, author of Vaccine, Vaccination, and Immunization Law. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Reggie is with us from Oshkosh on the road right now, I understand. Reggie, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Reggie?
So I work for one of the largest LTL companies in the country, and I have a feeling once this happens, a lot of people are going to leave. I'm vaccinated, but I'm wondering, is there another fallout that's going to come to the trucking industry because of this?
Thanks for the call, Reggie. And I know that's been a concern, Brian, not just in trucking, but in a lot of lines of work. Employers worried, are we going to lose workers, that small percentage who declines to get the vaccine? How big a concern is that?
Well, it is a concern. The OSHA in its rulemaking has considered that, and they've laid out their expectations for how many people they think would leave the workforce and how many would remain. Their expectations, I think, are a bit optimistic, but at the same time, we've seen circumstances where there have been assertions that a large proportion of people are going to leave a particular police force or a particular healthcare organization because of a vaccination mandate that was imposed. And at the end of the day, they ended up having 2 or 3% attrition based on that, or 2 or 3% of employees terminated who refused to be vaccinated. So it is a fairly small portion, but 2 or 3% can still be enough to feel a bit of a bite from it. That's part of the reason I think that the OSHA mandate does have this exception where you can choose to be tested on a weekly basis rather than being vaccinated. I would say with truck drivers in particular, the requirement does, again, exempt people who work outdoors. I think that, you know, there's a degree to which it could be argued that someone who is engaged in truck driving and is not necessarily physically interacting with other people in the course of that job, if there are ways that that can be avoided, would be exempt from the mandate requirement. That's something that I think will have to be brought up to OSHA, and you know, they'll have to determine that when the case arises, when someone says, well, because this is what I do, I'm someone who works outdoors under the meaning of the rule as it has been promulgated. So that's something that will definitely remain to be seen. There also may be some kind of interchange where we see people who work for these larger companies that are under the OSHA requirement leave to work for smaller companies that don't have that mandate imposed upon them. And at the same time, we see some people working for these smaller companies then sort of taking advantage of these openings in the larger companies and saying, well, now that there are jobs available in these large companies, I'm going to go work over there because I am vaccinated or I don't mind this vaccination mandate. So there will be a degree of that happening. But, you know, primarily that's one of the things that OSHA has to examine. They have to examine the economic feasibility of the rule that they promulgate, and they made the determination that it's not going to be a significant factor. And, you know, that's something that we'll have to kind of wait and see how much of a factor it turns out to be. But it hasn't been as substantial a factor as people have been concerned about in a lot of other systems.
Thanks for that call, Reggie. Liz joins us next in Eau Claire. Liz, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to bring up, Liz?
Hi. Well, first of all, I want to say I do support President Biden's mandate for large employers to require vaccination. That's happening at some places here in Eau Claire. But also, my question is, I recently canceled an appointment at a small clinic, because they did not require employees to be vaccinated. And one of the employees told me that this would be a HIPAA violation to require employees to be vaccinated. And I'm confused by that. Is that true?
Liz, thanks for the call. A lot of misinformation about HIPAA, this Health Insurance Portability Act law. Brian, can you tackle Liz's question?
Yes, HIPAA is very specifically directed at healthcare providers. So a healthcare provider cannot release your medical information without your permission. That does not prevent, and it has been held in various proceedings, it doesn't prevent an employer from asking about someone's vaccination status or their COVID status. It doesn't prevent it doesn't prevent an employer from requiring that the employee have the healthcare provider provide that information to the employer. So there's no HIPAA violation incumbent in the vaccination mandate, or really in any vaccination mandate. And generally speaking, as a society, we have had vaccination and vaccination mandates for hundreds of years, and have enacted legislative protocols such as HIPAA with the understanding that vaccination is part of what we do as Americans, and that information needs to be conveyed to those who need to know, particularly in the school systems, of course, where students need to be vaccinated and their vaccination status has to be conveyed. But also for a very long time, there have been vaccination requirements in the private sector. There used to be ubiquitous smallpox vaccination requirements back when smallpox was endemic in the population. And that information had to be conveyed to employers. And more recently, there have been flu vaccination requirements and a host of other requirements in the healthcare field specifically. So that isn't really a concern. There is a requirement under the Americans with Disabilities Act that employers not inquire about a particular disability. So if someone says that they are unable to be vaccinated due to a medical reason, the employer can't pry too deeply into what is the medical basis for their being unable to be vaccinated. But that's really the only privacy-based limitation on an employer's ability to ask that information. And of course, an employer that has that information has to be very careful with it, as you have to be with all private information that you hold about your employees.
Liz, thanks for that call. Going out to Terry in Milwaukee. Terry, hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. I wanted to just correct the misunderstanding that your guest has. Earlier in the discussion, he mentioned that for many years, Jehovah's Witnesses have been against vaccines or vaccinations. That is totally untrue. I've been one of Jehovah's Witnesses for 45 years, served on their hospital liaison committee, the chairman of the hospital liaison committee for southeastern Wisconsin, and 99% of all of our branch members in New York, 5,000 in the branch offices in New York, 99% of all of the branch members have been fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. if you watch our latest broadcast on JW.org, they mention how many have been vaccinated at the branch offices and sharing facts, medical facts, and scientific facts about the efficacy of these vaccines.
Terry, thanks for the call. We don't have much time left. A producer pulled up. It looks like that stance changed in 1952, where Jehovah's Witness said, nope, vaccines are your choice. Quick thoughts on that, Brian. Does that make it less likely that somebody will claim religious exemptions?
Well, actually, I do want to thank the caller for raising that point. There was historically a period where Jehovah's Witnesses were opposed to vaccination. That was the doctrine of the organization. And that did change. That has changed. There are still people, as in that case in Delaware, evidenced, who believe that becoming a Jehovah's Witness means being able to claim such an exemption. And there are religious doctrines, there are religions where vaccination and medical treatment in general is kind of frowned upon as showing a lack of faith in God healing you from things through prayer or things of that sort. But there are very, very few that have expressed any kind of specific and isolated objection to vaccination as opposed to medicine in general. And that's kind of a suspicious thing when a religious organization says, you know, well, we're going to accept, for example, testing on aborted fetuses for fetal cells for every other medication, but we're going to object to vaccines because they go through that testing process as well.
Terry, thanks a lot for clearing that up with us. I appreciate that. And Brian, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Brian Dean Abramson, adjunct professor of vaccine law at the Florida International University College of Law, also author of Vaccine, Vaccination, and Immunization Law. We talked to him today about the Biden administration's new COVID-19 requirements.